Welcome to Ever Beyond.
Broadcast through the Wolf Spirit Media Network.
Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond.
Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Yes, you are listening to Wolf Spirit Radio, and this is JP. Here we are. Finally, it's 2300 UK standard time on this planet. And, it's the, where are we? It's the Ides of January, 15th of January. Good Lord. So, I don't know. Is my free will still intact? I don't know if it's still intact. I think, what do I want to do? I want to drink. See, my free will is such that I have a cup of tea and a cup of coffee. That's how much free will I have. You know, and a glass of water over there. And a jug of milk. Yeah, I have so much free will here. Anyway. So, yes, good afternoon, good evening, and good morning to everybody here in the U of K, all over this planet, spinning globe. All right, so yeah, a little bit of structure of the planet. It's yeah, we know. All right, we'll talk about you. What's her name? What's his name?
His name is Kona.
Kona. Shh. Good boy.
Oh dear.
Woof.
Let me put my phone on mute.
Yeah, put your mic on mute for a second. Meanwhile, Kona's going absolutely dog poo. Anyway, so yeah. So where were we? Earth. I was just going to say that Simon was talking about, that there are chambers within the Earth. It's not a solid lump of stuff. Nothing in the universe is a solid lump of stuff. Everything has gaps and cavities and pockets. And some things exist and life forms exist and evolve or were dumped there and still survive, in pockets and caves that riddle the entire planet. It's like, really it's like a shell. It's quite a thick shell, but it's a shell nevertheless, that is porous. As we know, you know, eggshells are porous. There are cavities and, you know, they're made of fibers. So if you were to, look at the Earth on a kind of, you know, slice it in two, it's just like a cake. It's got, you know, holes and bubbles and caves and geodes and really the inside of the Earth is a kind of great big geode, like a great big crystal rock. Anyway, tonight, Ever Beyond is the open show, another open show after Simon's show, because it's always nice to talk to people who are sort of very lively in a chat room and I notice people and I say, oh yeah, you come on, you got stuff to talk about. And so I welcome Energy. Susan, how are you?
Hi, I'm Susan. I'm just doing great. How are you?
I'm very well. So, here we are and you were talking about a cube and you found tell us about where it all started. What is it that you were posting? And, okay. Let's talk about it.
All right. So in the chat room, we were talking about a cube and I think that the idea of the cube came up in your conversation in the last show. Is that right?
Yeah.
Was talking about a crystal and a cube, and it was one of the hosts telling a story about the cube.
Yeah, about Nancy and Walt.
Yeah. Cube. Yeah, she was telling a story about someone coming to her house, and this person brought this black cube, and it was a crystal. And the brothers showed up, and then there were UFOs in the sky and all that kind of stuff. That reminded me of something that I had read a long time ago in a book, And the book is called For the Land of the Lost, How to Get Ready for God, Fire, Earth, Water, Air. The author is Hinono, H-I-N-O-N-O. And you can still find it on Amazon if you want to find it on Amazon. So I've read this over and over and over again. I don't really consider that I would have a Bible anymore. I was raised in the church, but, you know, that's kind of, this is kind of like my Bible, I guess. I've read it through and read it through again and highlighted, and I remembered this passage in here from this book about the cube, and I went to look it up, and it seemed to really resonate with the people in the chat room. So that's what I was typing in.
Cool. So it's written by
Hinono, H-I-N-O-N-O. And Hinono is a channeled entity from, and we don't really know, the guy who really actually wrote this book, we don't know his actual name because he doesn't put that on the book anywhere. He just credits Hinono as the author of the book because he channeled him. Hinono is a, he was here on the earth about 2,500 years ago, and he was part of a tribe that was here before the Lakota became known as the Lakota. So he was like one of the pre-Lakotas. And he tells his story about his life and his children and his wife and his tribe and various things, and it's just really fascinating stuff. I've gotten a lot out of the book.
Does he relate to the Pleiades at all?
I don't know. It's been a long time since I've read it back to, front to back. I was going to say back to front. I kind of read things back to front. But I don't remember that they mentioned the Pleiades. They might have, and that was just not something that was really interesting or not something that piqued my curiosity at that time. So it would be now. It would jump right out at me now, but then, you know, it just didn't.
I see. So, well, my connection is that Tolek, you've heard of Tolek?
Oh, yes.
He relates a story that the Dakotans from the planet Dakota of the Taygeta system in the Pleiades are the predecessors of the Dakota, Lakota, Nakota tribes.
Right.
So that's where that connection is they're the star elders of the Pleiades. Meanwhile, yeah. You have these, so you have this thing that you were kind of typing in, and I can't follow the chat room, and your writing was rather small, and the screen is a bit distant for me. So,
yes.
For at least my benefit.
Yes.
Take a deep breath in through your nose, and would you read out the story, please? Thank you.
Okay. So this is right in the middle of one of the chapters, or maybe at the close to the end of one of the chapters. And it's on page 448, if anybody in the future ever wants to look this up. So I'll start here. And I tend to read too fast, so slow me down if I get going too fast. So back to the big question, how to get rid of this destructive energy among us? Who let it out and when? I'll tell you who and when. Long time ago, before the Egyptians were human beings in a society you call Atlantis, a people way ahead of their time who played out all five suns in less than 300 years of spiritual advancement. I won't speak to their material advancement because it wasn't the cause of their demise. Their achievements were spiritual, and their weaknesses were also spiritual. They saw Creator's plan for the world and for all the creatures in it, but they didn't see their own role. Funny thing, when you are trying to be a thing, you cannot see your own beingness. So they changed the future of all those that followed. They did this one thing. After seeing the plan, they sought to change it. They wanted influence. And without admitting they knew their error, they sought to personally possess true power and to control creation. True power is Creator's. Any attempt to alter creation without Creator results in destruction. This is why, from the very beginning of these stories, I recommended you stay way the hell away from seeking power, that whenever it is offered to you, you back up. You back up, but don't take your eyes off the very thing that tried to offer it to you, because here's what happened to the Atlanteans. They wanted to change creation. They wanted to alter the plan. By trying to mess with perfection, they put in service another aspect of perfection designed to protect itself from any attempt to own and abuse power. You've heard about Pandora's box? Well, I'll tell you, when they broke through to find this proverbial box, and believe me, there was a psychic spiritual wall put all around it, they went looking for the key to open it, instead of noticing that if Creator went to all this trouble to contain it, why the hell would anyone want to open it? Now, you notice the whole of the universe is round, and here's a box, something in creation that is square, cubical, like a salt crystal. A box mimics a salt crystal. So they thought, salt is necessary for life, yes? Humans can't live without salt, so, this box must be important, too. What's in this box? So right in front of being able to understand the great perfection of life, the great mystery, stands this box. What was in that box appeared as power for those who investigated. It appeared that way solely because of the intent of their investigation. That box being closed appeared to be an obstacle to their path of knowledge. It appeared as essential as a cube of salt. They gave that closed box the power they sought, though Creator had contained and hidden it from them. They wanted to give that no-good box the power to change creation because of their own selfish desire and intent. By wanting to mess with the plan, they magnified that destructive power that Creator had purposely contained. By taking incomplete understanding of knowledge and trying to use it in some way, especially spiritual, they fueled what was anti-life in that box. Now, I'm sure you can imagine what it was and why Creator tried to contain it, but I will tell you anyway. What was in that box was all of the thoughts that were outside of love. When Creator perfected the energy of love that is life itself, to assure its continuation, all the thoughts that were anti-creation were distilled down to a single energy and made to be contained. This container was then placed at the edge of creation and left to rot in its truly uncreative thought. Thus, what you would later come to call the Antichrist was to become the last resort teaching device of spirit about anti-life, about what is not God, and therefore what life truly is. You popularly call this very difficult teaching mechanism Satan or the devil. I will call it what the mother called it after it got loose on the world and its energy began to affect the thoughts within creation. And I will call it so because of its effects on the sanctity of natural life and the feminine aspect of God. I will call it the, quote, motherfucker, because that is what it has done. So, okay, the Atlanteans did it. They opened Pandora's box. I'll tell you what they got for their efforts. Vaporized. The most evolved of the earliest people on the earth got totally erased by one moment of human foolishness. And as a reminder, the rest of humankind got the worst psychic stink possible that doesn't seem to want to go away. Left over from opening the box was this foul energy of the mechanism of fear and sensual addiction with its memory stuck in the soil of the entire planet. It remains to this day and must be dealt with by everyone since. You know, many of your women today are very smart. To not be taken advantage of in this world, these women have learned how to give everyone the psychic smell test to protect themselves from another that is infected. Women generally can smell them out unless they're also infected. And then he goes on to this description of addiction and things like that. That's the most of it.
Awesome, Susan. Awesome. So Pandora's box was an attempt to separate and protect but instead it became like, what's in that box? It became an object of curiosity.
Yeah.
And so there must be a lesson in there, mustn't there?
Mm-hmm.
What
is? And we've had to deal with fear. It's the fear that's permeated the planet ever since then.
Mm. It's in, as you say, in the soil. It's very interesting. My guide said, something very similar about soil is, you know, we must change the soil that you're growing in. They said it years ago. And, you know, I've been, moving into a better place ever since. And it's essentially, you know, your environment is the soil which we grow in. And like they say, you know, a cell will, you know, make or break or become what it is depending on its environment. And like us, we're cells in a greater body. So if we have the right environment of the right nutrients and it's, well flushed away, you know, then we have, a healthy environment in which our spirits can grow.
Mm-hmm. If you look at the whole way that we live, everything is built on fear, the way that I see it. You know, why do I buy a pair of jeans and in 2 or 3 weeks they're busted out? Or a refrigerator. Why did I buy a microwave 2 years ago and it stopped working a couple of months ago? And it would take me $250 to replace the part that needed to be replaced. It's because companies rely on fear. They want us to have to replace things because the companies are afraid that if they don't create, having to replace it too soon, they're going to go out of business. And if they go out of business, then, you know, they die. So they have to have more, they have to have more products sold, more cheaply. You get the idea. So the whole economy is built on fear.
Correct.
So if we were to sit around and say, let's build the best pair of jeans that we possibly can from the best fabric ever and make them to the specification of the person who's going to wear them, and I'll put my name on here. I'm going to be the one who's going to make this pair of jeans, and I want you to wear these jeans forever. And if they don't fit you right, call me, and we'll make it right. You know, have the name of the person. Wouldn't that be awesome? Or make your own, but I've learned how to make my own. But we've got to create an economy based in love instead of in fear. Just look all around you. You can see fear everywhere.
Absolutely. It is, as you say, and as we said, it's the soil in which we are forced to grow it, to grow in.
Yes.
And that's the, and it becomes a bit like Soylent Green. You know, we're just like sitting on our own recyclement and not realizing that that's what we're trying to get nourished off.
So all the things that we talk about, you know, looking up at the chemtrails. Oh my gosh, look at those chemtrails. And when I moved to Oregon a couple of years ago, I'd never seen chemtrails in Nebraska to speak of. So it was like, what are they doing? Oh my gosh. It's fear. And of course now that we know about loose, we feed off fear. Okay. We've got to turn this around. We've got to consciously turn it around. And how do we do that? That seems to be the question of the day, of the weekend, in my world anyway, is how do we do this? How do we turn the train around?
Right. Okay. So, yeah, first of all, let's just address the stuff that falls apart situation. In the 50s, you would build a car. Now, there are cars around that are driving around today that were built then that have probably need very little maintenance. Are they still running? And then mechanics said, hang on a second, there's a profession to be made out of that, so it'd be good if you made things, cars that would fall apart bit by bit, so that we could build a whole industry about replacing those cars bit by bit and keeping them alive. And then it gets to the point when, you know, because they want to make more profit, they make very, very thin shells on the cars so that you just have to lean against it and you've broken it. And you know, that makes more work for the mechanics, and then the electronic engineers wanted to get in on the act, so now there's a whole electronic car computing industry that is connected with keeping these things from falling apart. Which they're like clown cars. You buy them and they start falling apart the day you buy them. I bought a Lada once. Do you know what a Lada is? It's the Russian car.
And I don't.
The old joke about the Lada is that if you want to get spare parts, all you need to do is drive behind another one. And they'll fall in your path.
It's basically the reason that I bought my first Japanese car in 1985, because the American-made cars that we were driving wouldn't start for me. And I had little kids. I had three little kids and a job to get to in 1985. So I wanted something that I could rely on and depend on that would start on a foggy, kind of cloudy, moist morning. It was about 35 degrees, and get my kids to the preschool and get me off to my work and not let me down. And the Japanese cars, I bought my first Honda, never looked back. I still have Hondas. Japanese cars work for me, and the Oldsmobile, I don't think there are Oldsmobiles anymore, are there? I don't think they are. So we stopped buying American-made cars, and I've always bought Hondas since then.
Oh, so there you
go. They work.
They work.
They work.
My favorite is, I haven't actually ever had one, but I like the idea as a Subaru. Because you know what Subaru means?
That's the planet. That's the Seven Sisters.
Yeah, that's Pleiades. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Pleiadian. Maybe they've got some Pleiadian technology above them. Anyway. So now, Silver Lightning's asking, could you please elaborate more on the psychic ability of women referred to in the reading?
Oh.
Please.
Psychic smell test. Does he say anything more of that?
Yeah. Well, it's, in terms of the psychic smell, this has been the topic of conversation a lot, because I've actually got a very sense of smell. And more so when I get that, my stomach complaint. And, you get more sensitive when you've got a stomach issue. It's like you become stomach aware and very smell aware. And in some ways, it's a heightened sense of discernment, because, you know, if you walk in, you got like the beginnings of a migraine or a migraine, you notice that you can smell things very much more sensitively. And if there are people who are dodgy, just go up, you know, just walk around, and you'll find that there are people that you really don't want to stand near, because they smell so bad that it's unpleasant to stand near them. I think this is why mm-hmm. people say, I can't stand them. You know, it means I can't stand near them because I don't like the smell of them. What do you think of that?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And now that I've been in Sherry Edwards' classes since October, everyone I can take I've been signing up for, I would say that what's going on in that kind of situation is something about the frequency. Either the person that you can't stand being around has a frequency you need, or is missing a frequency. How would it be? The person you can't stand to be around is missing the frequency that you need. So you don't want to be around them because they don't have what you need. So you want to be around somebody who has the frequency that you're missing so that you get that.
Yeah. And it may be that they have the frequency that you need and just too much of it.
That could be.
It's, it may be that. And, and actually I was looking at just to bring the old sniff test thing around. Somebody was saying, it was somebody in the chat room earlier, it's these famous, figures like Hillary Clinton and the Clintons and all that they smell really bad. The Rothschilds and people like that they smell really bad. It's, you know, they say it's like the sweat, you know, it's like the smell of sweat. Because they're essentially like so fear-based that they smell of that fear all the time. So that's another thing. And here's the thing. You know, the smell of fear doesn't make you fearful. Well, it depends. If you're feeling fearful, it'll make you feel fearful. But if you're feeling aggressive, it'll make you angry. The smell of fear makes you angry. I've noticed this. It's annoying. It's irritating. The smell of fearful people. You know. Have you noticed? You ever noticed that?
Yeah, and now that I've lived here in Oregon for a couple of years, I was never interested in Sasquatch before, and I started having Sasquatch dreams and having to ask Sasquatch questions. I mean, questions of people who had been around Sasquatch. The smell of fear, people in this area and in Washington that I've gotten to know, when they're up hiking in the woods, sometimes they will be hiking and suddenly come across this awful, horrible, smells like a skunk, but not really kind of smell. And then they know that Sasquatch is around. So what I have learned about that is Sasquatch will emit that scent to chase people away, because those kind of people are probably carrying a gun or trying to hunt Sasquatch, hunt him down, you know, kill him and shoot him and prove that Sasquatch exists and that kind of thing. They don't want him around. Or the person is getting too close to a private area or something that the Sasquatch don't want humans around. So they will protect themselves that way. Or just to protect themselves. And also, if people, and it's usually people who are fearful of Sasquatch who are doing things like that. So I think part of it is the human fear, the humans who are out there hunting Sasquatch, they're putting off a scent of fear. And so they're carrying their guns or weapons and whatever, and then Sasquatch is simply reflecting back to them who they are. That they're putting off this big stench of fear. So here you are. You like that? This is what you smell like.
Well, again, as you're aware of you with Shari's work, is that the frequency that is in excess causes the mm-hmm. repulsion mm-hmm. of the frequency that is in excess. So mm-hmm. you know, if you've got too much and they've got too much, you know. It's gonna send you away. You're not gonna be drawn towards it by curiosity or by love, you know,
mm-hmm.
or by hunger, or mm-hmm. whatever it is. Bloodlust? Yeah. So very interesting. Yes.
I had something that I would love to share with you about, and we were talking earlier today about Ubuntu and contributionism, and that was in...
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, back there. That's, this is one of the things that I've been living. I mean, I literally live mm-hmm. this. We have a Let system and I'm in it, and we have, you know, newsletters, and it's been running since 1998, and it's still going strong.
Mm-hmm. So I worked with the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska for a couple of years. I was their restorative justice specialist in the tribal court, and as doing that, I got some trainings, and I was supposed to start some sort of a restorative justice program within the tribal court, and got into the circle sentencing training. And that whole idea was something that I'd researched and wrote my thesis about 5 years before that time. So this was like a dream come true that was now my job, that I had to do this and set up an actual circle sentencing program in the tribal court. So I loved it. And when I got to the Winnebago tribe, then I lived there on the reservation, on the reservation next door. I lived on the Omaha reservation, and I lived there for 10 years. And I took classes, Winnebago history class at the tribal college, Little Priest Tribal College, and I was fascinated. So let me tell you the story that Felix White Jr. told our Winnebago tribal history class. And this was the story about their emergence from, they were in the Yucatan like 5 or 6,000 years ago. They were the, what we would call the Mayans, today. And their society was based on the pyramid system of, you know, a few priests at the top, and the priests were the 1%, and they were telling all the rest of the people what they had to do, and there was human sacrifice and all of that stuff going on. That was what their culture was like at that time. So there came a time when one of the shamans, according to what Felix told us, one of the shamans could see in the future and could see this big, huge tsunami coming. And he told the people, he didn't tell the priest, but he told the people, there is a big tsunami coming, let's get out of here. And he got about 250,000 of them together, and they all worked together, and they escaped. And the priest didn't succeed in trying to send a police force after them. And anyway, the priest stayed behind, and they got washed away, more or less, by the tsunami that did come. And the 250,000 of the people escaped, and they, you know, they got to safety, and they kind of went, whew, we're still alive, all right. Our shaman was right. He saw correctly. That's great. All right. So here we are. And we don't have any priests telling us what to do anymore. Awesome. Wow. They're not telling us what to do anymore. Oh, so how do we want to live our lives now? Do we want the priestly system again so that there's the 1% on top? Do we want to recreate that so that we still have human sacrifice and slavery and everybody has to be at the behest of the 1%? Do we really want to do that? Oh, well, we don't know another way to do things, so what do we do? So they prayed. And they asked their gods, give us another idea. What else is there? We don't know how to do this. And that's when they were shown the clan system. And the clan system, according to what Felix's dad, who's the tribal historian, Felix's dad and his buddies, what they could remember was 12 tribes, or 12 clans in the Winnebago tribe. And each one had its own specific duties, its own specific roles. There were 4 air clans, 4 earth clans, and 4 water clans. And he showed us the exact drawing. I've got this on a website someplace. If anybody would want to go look at the drawing, it's at communitycircles.wordpress.com. And look for the little picture that looks kind of like a daisy with a red dot in the middle of it. So they've got this clan design, and the idea is that, you know, the Thunderbird clan is going to be the priestly clan, and the Bear clan is going to be the clan that is in charge of being like the police officers. They're going to be surrounding and being the perimeter all the way around where the tribe is camped. And so on and so on and so on. And there were certain clans who had to find water as they migrated up around the Gulf of Mexico. There were certain clans that were the peace clans, and they were the negotiators, and they would go when the tribe was on the march, all the way around the United States. The peace clan was out in front, and they would be the first clan that the new tribes would get in contact with. And as they were going through new territory, you know, the negotiator clan would be out there first, and they would be making peace as with these new tribes as they go through, and then the other clans would come through, and they were the war clans. They all carried their war clubs and their weapons, but, you know, the first clan was the negotiator clans. So they all had their roles, and when they put it all together, and my interest as a master's in conflict resolution, my interest was to see, so how did they resolve conflict? Well, with this design, they didn't have to resolve conflict for the most part. That wasn't really a part of their concern. They were interested in creating a society where conflict was not even thought of. So their model was a conflict prevention society. Their idea was get all of the jobs done link everybody together. Everybody has a clan. Everybody has a purpose. Everybody has a role to play. Everybody's important here. Everybody's contributions are essential, like what Simon was saying today, that movie. It's a Wonderful Life. If each person hadn't been in there, in that tribe, the tribe would have been at a loss. And it would have been such a worse place. So everybody was really important in the tribe. So everybody had their clan, their purpose, their function, and everybody was celebrated. So there was very little conflict to have to resolve. And as I'm thinking of the contribution, the Ubuntu contribution model, we're thinking now of, you know, our society today is based on the pyramid system. We do have the 1% at the top. And we're looking at this year, the 1% is going to crumble. So what do we do next? What other model is there? It's the tribal clan system. We really need to take a look at the tribal clan system and how did that function? It's right there for us. It was a perfectly functioning system, a model of solve all of the problems, think it all through beforehand, get everything out of the way, get everything taken care of, and there will be no conflict. And then the idea here is it's a circle, and nobody is more important around the circle than anyone else, and nobody is less important around the circle than anyone else. So that when I was doing my family team meetings in Sioux City, and I worked with all the Native families in the area when they got in trouble with the juvenile court system, when they came to my family team meetings, I could have a judge sitting in the family team meeting. I could have attorneys. I could have people with 3 PhDs. And I could have the family, Native family who had no education, perhaps, and their 5-year-old and their 3-year-old. As we would go around the meeting, I wanted to hear from the judge. I wanted to hear from the attorney. I wanted to hear from the PhD person. And I wanted to hear what the 3-year-old had to say and what the 5-year-old had to say and what the grandma and the grandpa and the mom and the dad had to say. And I took notes of everybody's input, not just the judge, not just the 3-year-old. Not,
exactly.
Not just one person.
Exactly.
Everybody.
Yes.
As a role at the table. Everybody is equal.
Exactly. Even the dogs.
I even had my dog in the meeting. Yes, I did. The people would allow it. He's a great facilitator. And when people got really upset, he knew exactly the knee that he needed to bonk and who needed to be petting him at that point when they were getting upset and they needed to have a dog to pet. That happened so many times.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's like to us, it's like, oh, how do they know such subtlety? And to the creature, it's like, will you just stop shouting that need of yours? I'll come over, all right? Mm-hmm. But they're just so sensitive. Like I was talking about my sense of smell earlier and people say, well, you know, animals are really, really, you know, that on steroids. But, yeah, of course. But in that way, I can relate to animals. I like to relate to animals on that, very, very primal level. Now, let's go back to clan organization. Fascinating. 12 tribes. There's this motif of 12 that does tend to, reverberate mm-hmm. throughout the spiritual world. It's a,
yes. Yes.
And beyond the 12, there's the 7 because you've got the 3 and the 4. You see, you've got the 4, mm-hmm. so you said there were 4, 3 elements.
4 air clans, 4 earth clans, and 4 water clans.
Exactly. So, in Western astrology, that's the elementals, the earth, fire, air, are 4. So it's earth, fire, air, and water. But here in this model, there are 3. So what were the subdivisions of the 4 clans? Was there a similar process that happened within those 3 groupings? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Not really.
All
and
right.
You have to understand that I was an outsider and they didn't let me in.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, that's something to think about. If anybody understands this, you know, call in. We've got a show. We're trying to get, you know, we want to get to a truth. And, you know, your when I say a truth, it's, the truth is not a bunch of facts. The truth is the energy that created that factual reality. If you see what I mean. That's what I mean by the truth. It's, it's the highest, mental expression, if you like, or the spiritual expression of the will. Anyway, meanwhile, back at the clan organization, that's a fascinating thing. So, essentially, like you say, everybody's got a place. The babies, the judges, and no one is more, no one has a greater ear of the arbitrator.
Right. Right.
So.
And the original clan design too, I can also say, it was the way their society was built. So, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Keep going. Keep going.
Okay. I thought maybe my phone had died or something.
No. I am uploading Simon's show, which might cause a little bit of interference, but you'll be right.
Yay! Everybody's waiting for that. All right. So in the original clan design, let's say, that I'm of the bear clan, and on the left side of me, and I forget now how this is laid out, but we'll just say, for example, on the left side of me is the wolf clan, and on the right side of me is the snake clan. Okay, and I'm the bear clan. And in my family, my father, who is also bear clan, just died. Now, to do the funeral, I am not allowed to do anything about the funeral, and none of my family, none of my bear clan family is allowed to do anything about the funeral. But the clan to my left and the clan to my right, so that what I say, the wolf on the left and the snake on the right, those two clans are charged with getting everything ready, preparing the food, taking care of the body if it's going to be buried and whatnot, making sure that there is a wake. Now they do a 4-day wake, and doing all of the stuff that you have to do to take care of a funeral. And the person in that clan, where the person has died, they do nothing. Their job is to grieve and to mourn and to let go of the person who has just passed on, because they are, they're dear to them. So with the Winnebagoes, how they would do that is for 4 days, and this is the way they still do their funerals, for 4 days, they have a wake and they have food, and people sit, come and go into the rooms, into wherever they have these, for 24/7, for these 4 days of the mourning. And, you can be there at 2 a.m. And with the Winnebagoes, they want to hear the great stories. What did this person mean to you? Tell us the funny things. What did they like to do? Did they like to play chess? Let's all play chess. Did they like chili and Fritos and watching football on TV? Then we're going to have chili and Fritos and watch football on TV. We're going to celebrate this person like they wanted to be celebrated. And people, you want to remember the happy things. But the person from that clan who died, they're there enjoying and telling the stories and keeping that going and remembering, because they know actually the spirit of that person is probably right there in the room with them. And, let's have fun with this person while he's...
So that they're held so that they can hold the spirit of the deceased.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. There's a thing in the tradition. My Jewish tradition is that they call it sitting Shiva, or sitting Shiva. You know, as a kid, I was used to think, oh, people they just sit there shivering. You know, oh, somebody's died, everybody's shivering. You know, what's all this? But anyway, apparently there's not apparently, there is this thing, and similarly, you're made to sit on child-sized chairs. For a start, and I presume that this is to make it so that you're humbled, you're in a humble place, so that you can receive, you know, because people give you give smaller things, you know, you give things to smaller, you know, you give gifts to children, you give gifts to, you know, give treats to dogs and things. So people bring food, as you say, they look after them, they, you know, make sure the house is cleaned and stuff like that. I love mourning traditions because they're completely human, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very human thing and it's all about caring. So, all right. So back to the 12 clans. So, that's one arrangement, right? So when one person dies, have you got any other examples how this?
And simple.
Yeah, how yeah, this clan system
the,
can
the other
work
thing
together.
I was thinking about is, so if a young man, you know, they would get together, in the spring and they do powwows and things together. And those are the purpose of the powwows for one thing is to bring the communities together because the communities could be fairly far flung. So you all get together and you meet your relatives and you hope to meet, if you're a 17-year-old boy or girl, you hope to meet somebody who's interesting. This is also an opportunity for the parents and the aunties and uncles to say, you can't get interested in that person because they are your cousin. So we learn who is of our clan and who is of the clan on either side of us. And with those two clans, we can't have anything to do with our own clan and the one to the left of us and the one to the right of us. But we can look at the clan design and the one who is directly across from us. Now, that would be somebody from that clan, the actual opposite of our clan. That would be fine. We could check out that person or on either side of the one directly across from us. So that was another way that the clan design was used to encourage people getting together or saying, no, you can't go there. Very helpful.
Well, that would that would encourage a healthy genetics, wouldn't it?
Yes, yes.
I mean, you know, if you look at in terms of the, not the hoop, but the sacred spiral, which is the DNA that, as the hoop spins, creates the spiral mm-hmm. as it moves through mm-hmm. space and time. We have those, well, you know, basically you need a pair and the pairs are always the opposite pair. That's mm-hmm. basically what happens. And so, okay, so there's another example. How about commerce?
Commerce. I don't really know
well,
about the
I mean,
the
trade.
Old
I mean, how did, I mean, there's potentially some kind of, Ubuntu-like barter trade system going on.
Yeah, I wish I knew. That never came up. By the time that that I was taking Winnebago history, you know, the people there in Winnebago, Nebraska are, you know, they're just as American as anybody else. They have jobs. They go to Catholic school. They go to Catholic church. They wear Nikes and, you know, whatever you find at the mall these days, that's what they're wearing. They're fairly prosperous there with the Winnebago tribe. So, whatever ways they had of conflict resolution, for the most part, they have forgotten because of what's happened in history here the last 150, 200 years. And whatever old commerce ways, that wasn't my quest for being there, really, was conflict resolution. How did you guys do that? So I didn't ask about commerce. And I don't
know
if anybody...
Yeah, well, let's talk about conflict resolution then.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's about making deals, isn't it?
I did interview some of the elders, and unfortunately, they were taken away from their parents, and so these were people in their 60s, 70s in 2004 when I was asking these questions. So they were taken away from their parents in the teens and the 20s and taken off to school. And the whole purpose for doing that, of course, was to separate the child from the family so that the old ways and the old traditions are forgotten. And take away the language and take away the clothing and the hair, and it was very deliberate. So the elders that I asked, so what are the old conflict resolution models that you know? They had no clue because they were not raised with their grandparents who would have told them the stories. And they were not allowed to speak the old language, the old Ho-Chunk language. They were taught English. The people that I talked to were taught English. And their grandparents all talked Ho-Chunk, so they pretty much couldn't talk to their grandparents. So they couldn't pass down the stories.
So a lot of that was lost.
Yes. So what I did find out from people was the only thing that has survived is, for example, if a woman were being beaten by her significant other, what she would do is tell her brothers, the Degas. This would be, you know, tell your brother, and the Degas would all go out and get the guy who's being improper with their sister, and they would beat him up and leave him in the middle of the town and say, don't you do that to our sister anymore. And let's say he keeps continuing to do that, so they beat him up within an inch of his life and the second time and tell him, really, we're really serious about this. Don't do this. And if he keeps continuing to beat the woman, then he's either pretty much killed or he's excommunicated from the tribe and nobody lets him back in. That's really the only tradition that they told me. And it was like, gee, that's your conflict resolution model? Gee, really? That's it?
So much for you.
That's all I can hear from anybody.
Exactly. So much for all that. Like, oh, we believe in the native traditional ways. Oh, yeah, we kick the shit out of the people. Anyway, but, you know.
That's all I heard.
It's a way.
The only thing that's true.
It's a way. It's a way.
It's a way.
Oh, wow. So. Obviously, you're not going to use that as your only source for ways of resolving conflict.
I brought in the circle sentencing model, from the people there because they said, "Well, this is not our model. This is not us. What tribe did you get this from? This is not us." Okay, well, I got to do something here.
So what was the name of that model? Can you say it slowly? Hang on, Susan.
Circle sentencing.
Take a nice deep breath in through your nose. Everybody. Through the mouth. There's go. Okay, so. You told me to tell you to breathe. All right, so, okay. So, what was the name of this method that you have?
Circle sentencing.
That doesn't sound...
Yes.
All right. So you have been sentenced to be in a circle. No. What's that?
Exactly. The way that would work is it's restorative justice. If you want to look up restorative justice, it's the same kind of thing. So let's say that you are my first client that I got in the circle that I actually did create there with the tribal court, and you have five charges, and you're 15 years old, and one of them was carrying tobacco around and using tobacco in public, one was carrying a knife, one was using marijuana, and a couple other various ones. Okay, so I met with his parents, and I met with him. And he decided, and I met in the courtroom with the judge, and the judge explained to them that I was there and I was going to set up this new model, and would they be interested to try this out? And the young man looked at me and said, okay. And I about fell on my face. I mean, like, seriously? You want to do this? I'm not even sure I can do this, but you want to do this? Okay, we'll get it going for you then. So, I met with them, explained the whole process, and then I met with other people in the community, and I knew that alcohol played a role in there too. I think one of the other charges was that he was drunk out of his mind, and walked into a neighbor's house and was just drunk and sat down there and was kind of like just being obnoxious and being a drunk. Didn't hurt anybody, but like, why would you walk into somebody's house and sit there and just be drunk? Kind of like weird. Okay. So I met with some of the elders in the tribe and I explained what I wanted to do, and there was another Thunder Clan elder who wanted to be part of this. The young man was Thunder Clan. And so the elder said, yes, I definitely want to be there. And when I explained to him the whole process of what this was, restorative justice, and it's similar to the Maori process called family group conferencing, and I showed him some videos about that. He was very excited about that. And he said, yes, this is something our tribe needs. I'm here for you. I'm going to help you make this happen. And so I got everybody all lined up, and not lined up, but I got everybody's schedules arranged. And so we all came into a room one evening, and we had the young man and his parents and the couple of elders who were involved in this and who were instrumental in my being hired there with the tribe. And a couple, I think there was a probation officer there, and I wanted to get the victim, at least one of the victims who was involved, like the lady whose house it was where he walked in and sat down and was obnoxious and being drunk. She didn't show up, but we all sat around, and first what we did was the Ho-Chunk Thunder Clan elder prayed in Ho-Chunk first, and we smudged with sage at first. And he prayed in Ho-Chunk, and then he prayed in English, and then we all started, and we did four rounds of what we were doing there. So the first round was an introduction. Hi, I'm Susan. I'm here to facilitate. And then, you know, kind of like you pass a talking stick, and we passed the talking stick idea around the circle, and everybody got to say why they were here, why they were involved. The second round of talking was, okay, here's the charges, and here's how it... here's the charges against this young man, and here's how it has impacted me. Okay, so everybody got a chance then to say, and of course I was the one there who read the charges. So there's this, there's the marijuana possession, there's the tobacco, there's carrying a knife, and there's walking into somebody's house, and whatever the fifth one was. And then everybody got to say, this is how I feel about what I'm hearing from how this is how the community safety has been impacted here. And this is why this scares me to see him doing this, that sort of thing. The third round of talking, and he got to talk about it too. He got to talk about what he was doing, and I think he said, you know, I did the first thing and the second thing. I didn't do the third thing. Yeah, I did the fourth thing, and okay, the fifth thing, but not the way you described it. I did it this other way. So he got to say, you know, he had his input on exactly what happened, and his parents both had input on how this has affected them. So then the third round was what you think it would take to restore the balance and harmony that's been disrupted here. So what would you suggest, what would you like to see happen as a result of this, that kind of thing? And everybody shared, and some people were like, you know, we need to see him in school. He's missing a lot of school. Why isn't he back in school? We want to see him in class and doing his schoolwork. So let's start there. That's one of the things that we need to have him do. That's one of our sentences for him. Somebody else suggested, you know, are you athletic? Would you like to get involved on football team, or what would you like to do? And let's get you active. And there were a few other things, and then and people talked about what they thought would resolve the situation. And I'm taking notes this whole time. And then the fourth round was me saying, okay, so this is what we've got so far. How does this sound? And I read off the list of this is what it would take to resolve the situation. Does everybody agree with this? How does this sound to you? And then people would say, okay, that, but not this one. and let's take that one off. And oh, let's add this one. Is that okay with everybody? So exactly. We were not following a law. We were not a judge, and I'll say that I was a court reporter in courtrooms for 20 years, you know, and when a judge sentences somebody, you have a trial, you have a case, you have attorneys, and the judge has to follow the law and sentence the defendant according to the law. The circle sentencing program is the circle listens to what happened. They are community members. They know how it's impacted them, and they've seen how this has been impacting the whole community. And now they're saying, this is what we want to see happen as a result of this, and this is going to restore the balance and harmony and the safety to our community. So the round four is coming to agreement of what everybody would like to see happen. And then you basically sign, and then me, I'm the note taker, I'm the facilitator here, crossing this one out and writing this one in, and okay, does everybody agree with this? Okay, and I was a mediator for a lot of years before that, so I was familiar on how you make, how you write up a mediation agreement. It's basically you take dictation and you write down what people say that they are willing to agree to. And then everybody signed off on it. Our first one took 4 hours, and Barry, our elder, our Thunder Clan elder, was just about as exhausted as he'd ever been. He prayed, and that was the end of our session. After everybody agreed on everything, and we all signed off on it. And then what happened was we would come together every now and then to check up on our young man and see what he was doing, and see how he was coming on all of the things that we wanted him to do. Was he getting into sports? How was he doing in class? Was he going to class? Was he staying awake? And so on and so on. And the rest, there's a whole long story after that, but that was the basic of the circle sentencing program. That's how it works.
Wow. So it's essentially like taking the authority back into the community. And
yes,
more the authority than the responsibility.
Yes.
Because it's a really labor intensive process. It's something,
yes,
that you can't just say, oh, let's let the court deal with it. Let's just push it away and not take responsibility for our expression, what needs to be expressed about this particular case, which could in fact change, you know, like what would, like someone was saying about the, what's that film? It's a Wonderful Life. You know, if that boy turns to the light side, some amazing things could happen. So, we're at the top of the hour, well past it actually, but, I want to play it's a track of mine. If you're listening in stereo with headphones, you'll hear one voice on one side and one voice on the other. And I essentially synced, the other voice is known, that's Lucy Thomas, a dear friend of mine, and, this is called Dissolve. Well, that was all over too quickly. Dissolve. I love that song. Yes, indeed. If you want to, continue, there's a film, the film I was referring to was, thank you very much, Orionism. Frank Capra's, It's a Wonderful Life. How's that? It's 1930s or something. Anyway, thanks very much, Orionism. He's got some good stuff. I'm taking more calls. Do you want to, what direction would you like to go in at this point? That was a very, very fascinating discourse about the cube, the salt, the box, what the box is all about. Lots of people talk about the box, you know. Like they say, there's, you know, the Muslims have their great big black box, and the Jews have these three little black boxes that, you know, with leather straps that... Okay, so if you ever wondered what's inside those little black boxes, is a small piece of parchment, tiny little roll that is inscribed by hand, every single one of them, inscribed by hand, with, what is it? This. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Which means, hear, Israel. Listen. Listen up. Listen up, Israel. The Lord is your God, and the Lord is one. So, that's what it means. So, in some strange way, it's referring to the law of one. It doesn't talk about Jehovah. Is it written Jehovah? Jehovah? It might actually be. It's often written as Yad Yad. So, yeah, it might be Yahoo. Who knows? Who knows what it is? Anyway, come and disturb my train of thought. Come and derail it. Otherwise, I'll end up in Antarctica talking about time-traveling Nazis again. You don't want that. You don't want that. Let's turn up my... There we go. Another slurp of coffee. Some people said they wanted to call in, and nobody has, so let's, not yet. Okay, so thank you very much, Susan. It was lovely to hear your voice, and you have a great deal of confidence, and good to hear somebody speaking with that level of empowerment, so thank you very much. Yes, beyond conflict revolution, there we go. Community circles. Actually, I'll read this into the archive. HTTPS, communitycircles.wordpress.com/2012/07/24/beyond-conflict-resolution, all in lowercase. So yeah, I'm here for the next bit, for the next hour. What have we got to talk about? Well, does anybody know anything about what's going on with Standing Rock? I haven't heard from Audrey for over a week. I've been, buried deep in my own doo-doos. If anybody's got any updates from Standing Rock, here's an update. Let's have an update from, update from Florida. Are you in Florida?
No, I'm back in California.
You're
now.
You're in California. Hi, this is from Debbie. Don't know why I've got a stupid voice on. Anyway, hey Debbie, how are you?
Good. Been better, but good. At least my parents are better, so.
That's great.
That's good. But I wanted to call because first I haven't talked to you or heard it from anybody in so long, and I listen in. I listen to two of your YouTubes with Muggsy. So it's a total change of direction, but do you want to talk about any of that?
Oh, where Muggsy dissects me, me apart look at that horrible thing over there. Oh, and isn't that disgusting? Look at that. It's like being vivisected it's a virtual vivisection.
In every direction.
Oh my gosh. On every frequency band, it's like, oh, that's crap there. Oh, look at that. Oh, look at a really stinky bit of crap over there. Yeah. But I hope everybody's enjoying it.
Psycho machine or something. S-I-C-O machine.
Skio.
Or something.
Skio. Yeah, it's called a Skio machine. S-C-I-O. Yeah.
That's something. I had that done a long time ago, but only a teeny little session. I'm glad I didn't do the whole thing. Kind of hard to find out what a mess you are when you didn't even know.
Well, I think I'm healthy. That's the thing.
Yeah, I know. And then you see that. It's
Oh,
funny. How are you feeling, though? Are you feeling anything from it, or?
Well, of course, the first thing you get from anything like this, you never feel better, do you? That would be like asking for a magic pill that would make you feel better. No, because alternative medicine is never about making you feel better. It's always about making the bad stuff come out, rather than holding it down. Right. So. Yeah. Combined with the galactic wave that's going on.
Oh, I know.
Now, you see,
I haven't even been able to keep up on any of that, but that might be part of what's wrong with me besides what I just went through. Yeah.
I think there was another one yesterday. It was a very strange, intense feeling of calmness. If you could have an intense calm. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it was calm, but it was really intensely calm. It was like, oh, what's going on, Liz? I don't know what's going on, but it's calm. It's unusually calm. You know, it's like markedly, noticeably, notice what you notice kind of thing.
Wow.
Which sounds like a standing point, you know?
Tornado coming next, you know that comp?
Yeah. You know when the wave comes out, just before the big wave comes in, the wave has to go out. Yeah. And therein lays the pause. There is the gap between the space-time. So what happened, right? So the first, so I've done this 2 weeks now. And in a lot of these spiritual healing things, it takes 3 days because it takes, you know, first of all goes to the mental plane, then it goes to the emotional plane, and then it hits the physical plane. So it usually takes 3 days. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, bam, Saturday. Saturday, I wake up and oh my God. So I think Thursday my back started, and this is like I think we all got a default illness, like we have a thing.
A weak spot.
Yeah. And mine is just above my, well, I shouldn't say where it is because people who might have ill intent, well, they probably know about it anyway. Anyway, so my back went, and I woke up, that's terrible. Oh, I hate this. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And obviously all my negative feelings about having a back problem and all those old feelings that generated the back problem in the first place. So they all come up for examination and like, do I really want to carry on this? No, let's change this. So it's a way of cleansing through and picking through the garbage programming. It's like all those, you know, you have to go to your ad remove programs and remove all those wild tangent things on your Windows machine. If you notice, check your ad remove program, see if there's any wild tangent there, get rid of it. And there's also all these, you know, thoughts are happening. And then the next day, that's when it really hit. I got this thing, which I've only started getting recently. It only started happening since about sort of August time. And that is, this palpitation event. Or tachycardia, you could call it. And, essentially, you know, if you walk up a hill, you know, like Glastonbury Tour or something like that. By the time you get up, you know, I'm just trying to put this in a much, much less, lascivious way. But, you know, if you've done a lot of exercises, your heart beats really strongly like that. And kind of slightly arrhythmically. It just sounds like an African band. And so that started, and it takes, you know, it took a while to kind of absorb.
And you weren't walking up any hill, it just starts happening.
I'm just sitting there. And it's like, hibbity-bobbity. And I think that's what Dolly has as well. Because like there's a lack of oxygen. It feels like, you know, like you're up a hill. Like you've done some extreme cardio or something like that. You know, I think, maybe your heart needs some exercise, so let it happen. So that's what I had. That's what I had on last Saturday. So, and then, you know, while I was doing these radio shows, there was this pressure in my chest that was like, but it wasn't quite as bad as it. That had calmed down a bit because it, you know, it is a bit painful because it's cold. It's like there's not enough oxygen there. You know, you're kind of breathless. So that happened. But then things.
That's enough,
you know,
right there. You're back in that, but was there more?
Well, that's, you know, that's the heart center and the, and, you know, my throat's been a bit sore as well. But again, yesterday during this calm place, I realized, you know, I needed to do some meditation. So I sat and meditated and addressed some of these inner issues and spoke to those bits inside me. And so things are a lot more integrated today. I feel a lot more. But really it does vibe things up. It shakes them up. It shakes up old things to be swept up and, examined, discarded, or put into place.
Well, it's pretty amazing. When she does the thing, when she cleans the spirals, is it, she's got this down the drain thing, and I'm just watching it going, oh my God. And that's going through your energy system, and then the galactic wave on top of it, my goodness. You might have waited for better timing, or I guess you just want to get it all done at once.
Well, you know, she did this thing the first week. She did, oh, I'm going to clean your karma, you know, and I'm like, all right, okay, good luck. Good luck with that. And she's like, I want to move on with this, but it's still ticking away, cleaning your karma. I said, I've been here a long time, you know.
I know, I did hear that part. Oh, my God. That's how I've been able to listen to, you know, when I got home, I got it down a couple of YouTubes and I tried to listen to Simon's today and then I had to get back in bed. So I'm so glad you have that phone call-in number so I can just, you know, listen with the phone next to my ear in bed.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's really brilliant. Yeah. And those of you who wish to avail yourself of the delightful opportunity of our call-in number. Let's see. No, I don't even have it there. It's got 432 in it, though. It's on which page? Oh.
You mean the listen one or the one to call in and
the
talk?
The call-in to listen. Don't worry about the call-in
yeah,
to talk.
Yeah, I love that. Love it.
So that's really good. And that's provided by TalkStream Live, by the way.
Okay.
And you can actually go to TalkStream Live and I think you search for Ever Beyond and you can hashtag it and pull it up and like that brings more visitors in and, when Sean talks about being, you know, at the top of the list of the talk radio, that's it. So
yeah.
if you go to Ever Beyond, if you go to TalkStream Live and go to Ever Beyond, you can listen through that. Yeah. It'll give you.
Yeah.
And that'll up, you know, actually, I don't really care, to be honest,
right.
Deb, about ratings. I really don't give a damn. Cause I know that the stuff that I'm laying down is I'm laying it down for the future. I'm sorry?
It's a good service to have though, because ratings are not, because if you're anywhere and you want to listen and you don't have the laptop or something with you, you know, it's really easy.
Yes.
You can't do the chat though, you know, that's the only thing.
There is a mobile app.
You're kidding.
If you go to chat and go, if you go to the chat room and at the top, you've got a link that says wolfspiritradiochat.chatandgo.com. And you click on that one, then on the top right of this window, which this is the window that I use all the time because it's much bigger. It fills the whole screen.
Okay.
On the top right it says Android app.
And
you can go to that page and download the special Android app that will connect you with the Wall Street Radio chat room.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that. Very good. Very good. Oh, well, thanks for you all being so nice while I was away. I really appreciated the support.
Oh, Debs, you know, you're part of the furniture around here, so thank you so much. And I'm glad that you're feeling much better as well. Bless you.
Yeah, I'm getting there. And I'm glad you are too. Gee.
Well, we're moving through it.
How many more sessions do you have?
How many what?
What sessions do you have with Mugsy?
I have no idea. She's just stripping.
Oh, no.
I mean, like, how many strands have I got?
Oh,
all right, sweetheart.
God.
Thanks for calling in, Deb. God bless you.
All right. Love you. Talk to you later. Take care.
Bye. Okay. So there was a report from Deb. That was brilliant. Thank you so much for calling in and, excellent. Yes. So, Jim Self, so who's that? Yeah. So, yes, you can call in 712-432-9588, and that's That's the TalkStream Live number. So you can go to TalkStreamLive.com and you will get to the Ever, you know, just do a search and you can search for Ever Beyond. And with that, you'll get, you'll put Wolf Spirit Radio on the map. Do that. Put Wolf Spirit Radio on the talk radio map. Not for my benefit, but for yours. So, I have another caller. Elizabeth, good evening. How are you?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
I'm okay, thank you. Bit of a sore throat, but it comes with the time.
Yep. Well, as I said, everybody's got their default thing. Is it something that is normal for you?
No, but it's something in the air, really. I believe there's changes happening, and normally I don't even get colds, but you know, I think there's changes happening to us all, and it's part of that. To receive the new, you have to expel the old. To have a baby, you go through the labor.
It's never easy, is it?
It's never easy. And to welcome the new, you have to sort of sometimes go through all these changes. And I believe that's part of it. All these new waves coming through the solar system.
So, you've been, I'm so sorry, but you know, I'm so like mentally busy. You know, you'll send a message and say, oh, and I never get back to you. And I'm so sorry. And to all the other people who I never get back to, because I'm just like run, you know, the first day that I get off, I need to sleep most of the time, most of that day. It does tax quite a lot of me, this whole radio business. So, you know, and like Elizabeth, you've been sending me messages and calling me, and it's very sweet. but I'm just so unable to let go. Okay, right. Now, what have I got
no
to do?
No worries.
So rather than, sending me a bunch of disparate messages, you can give them all to me in a block, and it'll be it's in the recording now, you see.
Uh-huh. But I have sent you some.
Please. But you started getting some messages regarding me. I don't know, when did that all start?
Oh, I get some toward you, I don't know. I mean, I started listening to you and Simon. Then I started listening to you when you're doing those reading, when you're reading with your colleague, your Miss
Jessica.
Yes. And then I started having sort of this projection of an entity that was with you. But I get these things, you know, ever since I was a child anyway. That's long before you. You know, I'm sort of sensitive, I suppose.
Sure.
Aren't we all? I think
so. Yeah, I think we all are. And it's a matter of where, it's like we remember everything. It's not that we recall lots, but we remember everything, but we can't recall everything. So we see everything, but we don't see everything, if you see what I mean. Yeah, we perceive everything, but we don't see everything. I don't know. So where did it start? Well, you know, you saw, did you say you projected an entity?
I didn't project. I saw, whilst you were reading, I saw this, I saw your studio, your room, and behind you there was this amazing, beautiful, soul person, which I think is actually very related to you. It could be a different dimensional you, but it was very attached to you, very protective to you. And it was as you were reading, and so it was sort of projecting from you. or would you?
All right. So could it be one of the voices that I was reading out?
Yes, it very possibly can be. Uh-huh. But because I don't, I have not followed you all the way, so I don't know if it is, you know. I have to try and be more of a follower.
Well, I tell you, there are now 75 episodes of the Andronicus Transmissions.
Yeah, yes.
And
but it was only that voice, yes, that brought on that character.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it was tall, had sort of long, elongated eyes, very, very blue-gray, very, you know, and it had some sort of blue-gold sort of colouring garments on, but it was connected to you in a most wonderful way, really. It was no bad, it was good.
Okay, is that, I mean, is that like a Lyran self, a Promethean self, is that, you know, that sort of thing?
It is very possible. I didn't have long enough to lock onto it. That's why, you know, when we spoke before, but you were in a rush, I was trying to see if I, when speaking to you, would be able to connect and it would come forth.
So,
you were in a hurry yet again.
I know, but here we are. Here we are, so you never know. We are,
you never know.
He, she, they make a surprise appearance. So that was the first time I was there in you. You saw this. Can you describe the color of the gown again?
It was a blue, and it had gold as well to it.
Was it like a gold trim?
A gold, pardon?
Like a gold band around the edges of the cloth, a trim.
Yeah, it had gold around the waist and it's gold in around the neck. But I mostly saw, you know, there was this really amazing blue, very, very blue.
Blue, like a lapis lazuli blue?
Yes, it's very possible, yes. Yeah. Very, very, yes. Because lazuli has got that sort of, yes.
How very interesting. This is a colour that has been coming up recently, and I was speaking on Jessica's show on Sunday with an artist who's a great musician, brilliant musician, and an artist, and he says, yes, I've been doing loads of paintings recently. And oh my God, I said, look, I don't know, but have you been using a lot of blue recently, the lapis lazuli royal blue? And he said, well, yeah. It's like, I totally got that vibe off him. Yeah. And in fact, I got various LEDs around here that are projecting that color.
Yes.
It's a very special, rich kind of blue, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Mm. Yes, it is. And it's very connected to all the energies that are at the moment very full on, you
yes.
know.
Yeah.
So I'm not incredibly technological about the way I speak because I just am. Things just come through me, you know. I don't.
That's okay. You just tell us, you know, there's enough of us here who are sort of mediumistically sensitive to understand what you're talking about, even though,
yeah.
you know, you may not have the same words. We all see truth and we all have a different word for it.
Yes,
that's
indeed.
All. That's all.
Indeed. It's just because since babies, you know, since the moment we are born, we are so put in boxes continuously, so you're not supposed to, you shouldn't, and then it minimizes that what we are, because fear, yes, again, comes into it. Fear of not being accepted, fear of this, fear of that. So we're all conditioned souls. Well, we think we are conditioned. We allow ourselves because that is the way society flows. But now we are on the cusp of being able to free ourselves from all that. It is within the grasp of every soul, everyone, because we are really, truly one light, having different experiences in bodies, different, you know, because we are in body here on earth. But when we are not in body here on earth, we are one soul, one light, one consciousness, one, you know, one together experience that exchanges knowledge, exchanges love. But even though we are very individual, when we are one, we still keep that individuality, but we are one in sharing, in love, in everything. It's very beautiful. I find it sometimes difficult to put into words because it's all there, and I see it in my dreams, I see it in my waking state as well, but sometimes it's so amazing that it's difficult to put it into words, because truly our languages, you know, and I say languages because it's from all over the world, do not have enough verbalism to explain the oneness of it all. Is so beautiful, so powerful. There's not enough words in human, in the human version.
The English language has certain limitations to prevent us from actually communicating, especially between Americans and English. Have you noticed they throw the opposite word meaning,
yeah,
the opposite meaning for either side of the pond. So we're bound to bound to become in a disagreement.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
It's just, you cannot explain, put into words the oneness that is all, yeah? Because there is not enough words to explain the whole. We are very limited in speech. Speech is only one way that we can come forward and explain as much as we possibly can and understand. But when we go beyond speech, then we can communicate that in a much better way.
That's true. And that's one of the reasons I recognize that when I speak, things come through and people energies come through me. Particularly, you know, if I were to read somebody's article, you know, their energy comes through in the same way that the energy of these beings comes through when I read them out. It's quite a...
Exactly.
Yeah. So everybody's guessing who was that being? Was it Borkum? Was it, you know, was it Primus? Was it Rodan? Who knows? Who knows?
But he was a very powerful voice that you threw out, but because I caught it sort of, not in the beginning, and as I say, you know, I couldn't recognize it. It was a really nice, powerful voice that came out. And I was like, I like that, JP. And...
Ah, oh, was it Borkum? Was it this kind of voice?
No.
No, not that one.
No, it was quite rawr. It was quite very nice voice.
Oh, rawr.
It was an amazing, captivating voice that you just drew out. And with it, it just clicked on the visual. And, you know, those things happen. You know, it's just like when I do, I'm asleep, pick up a pen and start writing in my sleep. You know.
Oh, right. And what happens when you read what you've written?
I'm surprised because I'm not aware of what I write. I just write.
And
well, you get interesting stuff.
Yes, like you can't just say, well, you get interesting stuff, and then come on. Let's have some examples. Have you got any examples? That's what we're saying. Have you got any examples?
I could read something.
Please, that'd be great.
But I cannot change what is there. It is I write it down, but I'm just the pen. I'm just a hand. So I can do that if you'd like.
I'm sure everybody would.
Intention, matter, or materialization. Sorry for my, okay. The stronger the intentions, the faster the materialization, to the point that in fact the materialization already happened before realization, but simultaneous to intention. Water being important, because it carries all the necessary memory and property of such intention. Human bodies, when looked after properly, they are perfect conduits for that. The human race is therefore special and needed for the clarification of intention, because it can create in mind and heart visions of that which it desires. Being third and fourth dimensional beings, this transformation is opening and has been for some time now, happening and has been for some time now. Once it recognizes its power, fear will no longer stop its creation, and thus evolution will occur to point of a fifth dimensional state of being. Far more spiritual and advanced will no longer be so easily manipulated into fear or chaos, thus become what is meant to be for a long time in human terminology, between brackets, humans so beautiful and full of potential, but intensive unaware of its own power of creation, so preferring to convey power and responsibility to other more advanced, not so spiritual minded beings. Creation is and always will be naturally and powerfully controlled by the one that is all. There are no beings that can fully control others unless it is allowed for some whatever reason. The lack of information has led to a warped sense of reality, which caused much pain and destruction for a time. But information has and is becoming more and more available. Memory imprinted in the water and crystalline structure of human beings carries that information, and with time all will know from within what is. You are creators, amazing beings, like many in other worlds and galaxies. Open your hearts and work with the truth that lies within. Allow for spirit to work together, for all is playing itself in God and his wisdom as created. And it says, signed to all children of love, God, the one, the creator, love be with you. Whatever you can call it, whatever you want to call it, it comes through like that. I do not change it.
Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth. There's some lovely stuff in there. Lovely insights. And, you know, like I was just put in the chat room, you know, there are authors that you read that seem to have no traction.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's no, like, what the heck is this guy writing about? Or this woman's writing about? And then there's others that you just can't get enough of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I said that that's because they're writing from their soul.
Yes.
And, your soul recognizes that. And it's been looking for that kind of connection.
Yeah.
And, you know, those of you who've followed my shows for the last few months, you know, realize that I'm on the quest for like finding out what happened to the Lyrans.
Yes.
And who are they? And we're discovering that we are all of them. We all are.
Exactly.
Different aspects of the one group of Lyrans who split up many millions of years ago to find their way. And we've found our way here, listening to Wolf Spirit Radio, you know, enough of a group of us to realize, so that's what's happened. And that's why we're here. And we're here to rebuild the cosmic, Lyran having, you know, like the children of the Garden of Eden having eaten the apple and now enjoying apple pie and, cider. And, you know.
It's the spark of life, isn't it?
Yeah. Being able to, you know, having eaten of the apple that we now are, we know the difference between good and evil. We've been there. Yeah. We've been evil. We've been good. We know how to kick ass. We know how to chill out. That's the life.
It's remembrance, isn't it? It's remembrance. Mm-hmm. And as children, because we all are children, sometimes you have to go through all of the experiences to know what is. You know, often if you say don't do this to a child, it will try and do it, even if it's behind your back.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing about when you tell a kid not to don't do something. Apparently children don't hear the word don't. It's wired into our matrix. We, you know, if it says, if anyone says to us don't, it's just a command to do, really.
Well, and I think we are all children, you know, we are all children, different stages. I mean, I believe, you know, this is my belief. You cannot, you know, I cannot tell you this is it, but my belief, that's what I sense, is that we are all living here and at the same time in different dimensions, different ways, and sometimes we connect with that, you know. And we're just children. This is all a playground of learning. No better university than to live it. And this is at one of our classrooms, this planet, and we've been from one to the other, and we are still learning, you know, and we yearn for things that we know how are back there, like you were saying, you know, with the Lyrans. So we have this sense of loss, sense of, but we don't know why, because it's long forgotten, but it is there. It's like it was saying in part of what I wrote down. I myself don't even understand all of it. But when, you know, we are water and crystalline beings, and eventually it will all click in, and the memory that water carries, the crystalline must have something to do with it, and it will kick in, and we'll all start remembering. We'll all start functioning in a much better way. That is part of my belief. As I read these things, it clicks in with what I believe. But I don't, I'm just a pen. I don't think this. This comes true.
Well, you know, there is a merit in, understanding and, you know, it's good to be a pen. But wouldn't it be better to be a computer or a word processor? You know that you actually understood the words.
Of course, I do understand it.
You know, I don't know how long have you been doing this? How long have you been receiving messages like this?
Well, ever since a child, I've always had, you know, out of body messages.
But do you write them down?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah. Other times, I just wake up with a whole story.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm getting to, Elizabeth, is that there are, if you look at some of your earlier stuff, like when you were, say, 10 years ago, even 10 years ago, okay?
Yes.
Look at your stuff from 10 years ago, and there'll be things that you wrote down then that you didn't know what those words even meant.
Exactly.
And then you look back and by God, you know what they're talking about. And by God, it makes sense.
Exactly.
It makes a lot of sense. And this is what I'm finding about my, you know, and I was writing down one word at a time. I was listening very carefully and I could hear a word and I wrote that word and then I would listen and there would be another word. And so it was almost like I wasn't kind of composing this. I wasn't making this up. I wasn't pretending to do this. I was listening in for feeling this word bubbling up and eventually, you know, and then when you look at all the words together and then you look at the context in which the words were stored in all of the different messages, they all are a holographic entity of information that makes sense when you look at it from the other end.
Yes. It all comes together eventually, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like that puzzle that sort of spread, and it does not necessarily make sense to start with, but then as you look at it in your mind, you know, the computer inside of your mind starts configuring that color and that shape will go with that one over there. And even they're not put together yet, it starts going in on your mind and you, with your hand, pick one up and pick it and put them together and more and more and more. And this is the kind of thing that we all do. I mean, in our dreams and in our thoughts, and I think, you know, there's nothing special about anyone, because I believe all of us can do this.
Well, yeah, this is the human being becoming the light-bodied higher self.
Awakening. Yes, yeah. It's awakening.
But it would really, you know, it. So, for instance, Elizabeth, have there ever been any communications that they've had with you that you've actually changed your behavior because of them? This is an interesting thing.
Have they
ever said, oh, it'd probably be better if you laid off the chocolate for a while, and then you realize that. And then the doctor said, yes. You know, you could have, yes. You've just vague, you know, missed dying from eating too much chocolate. As if, you know.
Yeah,
I'm
yes.
just making up a silly thing, but go on.
No, I know what you mean. Yes, of course. There has been lots of occurrence like that. Even when I was a child, you know, if I'd go to bed, for example, with a worry, for example, a very minor thing, yeah, I worry about how to tie a knot on a tie, and I did not know how to do it. And I went to bed thinking of that, and I woke up, picked up the tie, and I did the knot, because it was shown to me how to do it. And just little things like that. There are bigger pictures as well, I found. But sometime suggested in a milder way. Sometimes in vision, sometimes in awakened state. But it all depends really on my state of mind, my state of receiving. Because sometimes I also block it. There are times I don't want to hear, and I'll say, because for example, there was a time I was writing during the night, and it was every night I was writing and writing and writing, and I had to say, no, stop. Can you come to me during the day? I know you have got no time. For you, nighttime perhaps is not nighttime. But I need to sleep because I was becoming exhausted. So next day I got up and I went and sat down. And it was for the first time that I actually wrote something down in my waking state. And I sat down and I had a pen and paper in front of me. And I was waiting and I thought, well, nothing is going to come out of this because I'm normally a useless writer. And eventually it just happened, you know, and I started writing and writing and writing. And I said, thank you for listening. At least I had a better night's sleep. So, yes, we can converse. I can open my own spirit, my own listening state, and I can also communicate. And sometimes I can also play deaf ears, like all humans do, you know. Yes, I do get.
So thank you.
You're welcome,
Elizabeth, for calling in. I just want to give my guides, my communion, a little plug. I've reset their website. I made a website for them. It's called crownbasetransmissions.com.
Uh-huh.
That's their website. And, I've started looking back through all the years of communications with them. And, you know, like I said, I used to just whine at them and say, you know, when am I going to get laid? When am I going to get paid? You know, I didn't have any sort of major spiritual aspirations, you know. Well, I sort of did, but, you know, mainly wanted to know when I was going to get laid or paid. And in amongst those, oh yeah, sure, you're going to get laid. Yeah, shut up, next week. Yeah. And, you know, I'll show you. Yeah, the money's good. Yeah. Well, you know, they've been helping me with money, and I've fixed it, the money thing. Maybe we'll talk about money another day. Maybe I'll talk about that on the journeys tomorrow. About, someone call in, you know, we'll talk about money and how to detach from the importance of money and how to become comfortable with money.
Yes, I am fine. It's still,
we all are. We all, a lot of people have. And, yes. I have to say that I've broken it. I don't have any worries anymore. Yeah, it really helps. Thank you very much, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much for
everybody who called in. And, where the hell's my outro? Oh, there is. And it's just like, we'll be joining Frank Jordan and the team, any minute now. And here we go. Thank you very much. Oh, who else? Who called in? Yeah, Susan Energy. Thank you very much. And who else called? Who called Katrina? Oh, Deb. Yeah, Deb. And thank you very much, Elizabeth. Good night, everybody.
You're welcome. Bye.
Beyond.